Mighty 990 Broadcast Center. It's time to wake up Memphis.
Good morning, Memphis, and wake up. Time to rise and shine. Someone asked me what I did the other day for work, and I said, I basically act as the city's rooster. Time to wake up, except I don't crow and caw or whatever. I just, time to wake up and time to rise and shine. Go grab some coffee. I have some black coffee in front of me. So how it works, I basically go through 3 cups of coffee before 7 o'clock. So if I always sound wound up, will it work out and turn out well for my heart? Who knows? Lord only knows. But that's how we get this thing moving in the morning. And thing referring to the host of this morning show. So I'm walking up the stairs. I spill it all over myself. So if that is any indication of the day, well, I went out of it. By the way, I am out tomorrow. I am actually headed to Manhattan. No, I have not been summoned to report the former president's historic criminal case. I'm going to go see a friend. Good friend lives in Manhattan. Family lives in Long Island. So back and forth for a couple days. I'll be back on Tuesday. In the meantime, Fred Tappan will be filling in. So very thankful to have a great weekend host that will step in. All right, we've got to get into what looks like a massive cover-up with this case involving fallen officer Joseph McKinney. So it's gotten from bad to worse, but the facts are still the facts, and the reality is this, that irregardless if it was friendly fire or a thug shooting one of our heroes, the fact is it was preventable. And why it was preventable was because you had a district attorney along with a crooked judge, Judge Bill Anderson, and this commissioner, Christopher Ingram, that were all part of this scheme to release violent offenders back out of jail. And if those violent teens, those thugs, the 17 and the 18-year-old, would have been following their curfew, right? They were under a curfew. That was one of the provisions of being released on their own recognizance. That officer would be with his wife, and that little girl would still have her father. But I'm telling you, they're trying to get ahead of this story because there's been so much public outrage towards the district attorney's office, Judge Bill Anderson, and the Shelby County commissioners that appointed a lot of these judicial commissioners, that we knew this was going to happen. As a matter of fact, I have multiple sources that a couple days ago said the DA has egg on his face. We don't know yet what that egg is, but he's trying to spin this and get the heat off himself and point it at policy within the Memphis Police Department. No, it couldn't be our radical judicial prosecutorial philosophy, which is to treat criminals like they are victims and victims like they are criminals. So we knew something was coming. We get an ominous message by the MPD yesterday that said, basically, in light of this new information, Joseph McKinney is still a hero. So all of our listeners, as well as the team at KWAM, wondering, okay, what changed in this case? And that is when the district attorney dropped a bombshell, which was that it appears, based on new evidence, that Joseph McKinney was not shot by the 18-year-old thug, but by another Memphis police officer. And I've got the full statement in front of me, because it matters in how they're charging the teen that is still alive, that is still in the hospital, the 17-year-old. Here is what the district attorney's office said in a statement. Our office, recently released a statement within our intent to file a motion to transfer the 17-year-old involved in the officer-involved shooting to adult court. Within the statement, we detailed the charges against him. Since then, some questions have arisen regarding the absence of a murder charge. We're not proceeding with the murder charge at this time because current information indicates that Officer McKinney was killed by friendly fire. Although current information indicates friendly fire, we believe the 17-year-old's actions are reprehensible and are still the real cause of Officer McKinney's death. Should a legal avenue open up for additional prosecution, be assured we will pursue it. So that is a bombshell and an unexpected twist in this scenario, this case rather. What's telling is, I'm telling you, there is a mole inside his office. Someone is upset at this new DA. I don't have confirmation on that, but when some audio was leaked to members of the media, including yours truly, of the bond hearing room where this 18-year-old just a month ago was in front of the district attorney's top prosecutor. So in this room, you've got the DA's top prosecutor, you've got the judicial commissioner, and the thug. Okay? They're all in a room. And we, the public, have no idea what is going on behind closed doors. Except now we do, because someone, and I'm going out on a limb and saying it, someone within the DA's office leaked this audio. And why this is critical to indicting the DA, who, after the case with the officer on Friday, released this scathing email, this statement that said, our district attorney's office pushed for the harshest penalties. Actually, I have the exact quotes concerning this judge and this commissioner releasing the 18-year-old out of jail based on his own recognizance without bond. And what the district attorney's office said initially last week was that our office strongly argued against lowering the bond. And here on this station, we applauded the district attorney. He's throwing the judicial commissioners, the judges, under the bus. He is tough on crime as opposed to the judicial commissioners that are soft on crime. What turns out, that is a complete lie. Okay, so now we've got the audio. It was sent to KWAM, and I want you to take a listen to some of it. First, you'll hear the top prosecutor for the DA, who is allegedly supposed to be arguing against lowering the bond. Now, the audio is a little bit fuzzy, but I've got the transcript and we'll walk through it together. So take a listen to this one here, where the district attorney's prosecutor does very little to increase that 18-year-old's bond. Cut 18.
Currently a $10,000 bond. That's it. I really don't want to see Mr. Logan behind bars, but his next court date is tomorrow, if I'm not mistaken, in that group. Like I said, the bond's currently $10,000. It's a fairly low bond, really, given the circumstances.
So what the prosecutor says there is, quote, currently a $10,000 bond has been set. I really don't want to see 18-year-old Mr. Lobley behind bars. But his next court date is tomorrow, if I'm not mistaken. Is that correct? In that second cut you heard, the DA's prosecutor said the following, quote, like I said, the bond is currently $10,000. That's a fairly low bond, really, given the circumstances. So the district attorney's prosecutor knows that given this 18-year-old Mr. Lobley's egregious record of violence, this is an extremely low bond. And that was set by another judicial commissioner before Christopher Ingram, commissioner number two, and I get it's confusing, said, no, we're not going to give him a bond at all. We'll release him back out onto the streets with nothing. So anyways, then the DA, the prosecutor's DA, goes on to basically say, my suggestion would be the same, but if the court is inclined to lower the bond for Mr. Lobley, I won't be upset about that at all. So here is that audio. These are the receipts of our district attorney in his office lying to us to cover his butt. Cut 17.
My suggestion would be to keep the same, but if the court is inclined to lower it, I won't be upset at that.
Again, my suggestion would be to keep the bond the same, but if the court is inclined to lower that bond, I won't be upset at that. Now, I'll throw it out to you guys. Comparing what you just heard with the district attorney's office on Friday releasing a statement saying that they argued strongly against lowering the bond, the DA got caught with his pants down. Liar, liar, pants on fire. So this report is released yesterday. Members of the media got it. Again, protecting sources. But I have a hunch it's someone within the office of the district attorney that knows that he is crooked, knows that he is corrupt, and knows that ultimately he's going to point this at MPD and the policies within the department to save his butt. So Right as this report is released, Fox 13 airs this scathing lie against the DA. That is when the district attorney drops this latest evidence that would reveal that Officer Joseph McKinney was not shot by teenage thugs, but by friendly fire. To me, it sounds like a cover-up. And regardless, as I said, coming on at the top of the seven, the facts don't change the reality that that cop should still be alive. I mean, I find it appalling that there are already planned protests across the city of Memphis because another black man was shot by law enforcement. Oh, if you don't think that Ben Crump, Al Sharpton will be booking their tickets this weekend and be in Memphis by next week, and this will try to become a Tyre Nichols 2.0, you just wait. And they are going to throw the office, the police department's officers under the bus. And I find that absolutely sick. So taking your calls this morning, 901-260-5926, 901-260-5926. So also in this recording that we were sent, you can hear the judicial commissioner, Christopher Ingram, citing state law that gives him the allowance to release the thug back out onto the streets. And again, the Daily Memphian and local news, they are carrying the water for these radical judicial commissioners. There's a headline that's at the top of their website this morning, and I'm pulling it up. Commissioner followed the law when releasing the suspect in MPD shooting. So yeah, they're all over themselves trying to carry the district attorney's propaganda. But anyways, take a listen to Christopher Ingram citing the law that allows release on your own recognizance, ROR, and then also whether this 18-year-old is a threat to the community. Cut 16.
And making a decision, I must consider the seven factors listed under 40-11 and 115. The other consideration for the court would be the safety of the community. This defendant does not have any prior convictions. And as such, there is no basis for the court to find that he is a risk, presents a risk of safety to the community.
Well, that aged like fine wine, didn't it? That the thug was not a risk to the safety of the community. All right, I'm over it. We'll get to your comments on the other side of the break. Coming up, Wanda Halbert, one of the most incompetent people in America, was expected to show face in front of the Shelby County Commission after she was supposed to show face about a month ago and did not do that, sent the commissioners, and we got the emails that, oh, I'm really busy and I can't make it. I mean, convenient considering the fact that she got caught with bad math. So they rescheduled and worked with the clerk's schedule. She was supposed to be in front of them yesterday. I'm going to throw it out to our listeners. Do you think the clerk showed face yesterday? I'll have the answer for you if you're not smart enough to know it on the other side of the break. Don't go away. All right, so we know we have our own NPR in the midst of Memphis. You do know that, right? WKNO. And I would say the copy, the print edition, I guess it's digital, is the Daily Memphian. I mean, anytime they can kiss the mayor's butt, they will send their reporters. It is a love fest. Mm-hmm. Mayor Paul Young, he's doing so good. Crime is dropping. And I'm frankly so sick of it. Jeff Calkins, who is like their sports guy, also carrying the propaganda as well. And he shared this Daily Memphian headline that said, overall crime rate down in Memphis for the first quarter. That's the headline. Here's what they said. Crime in Memphis trended down across key categories in the first quarter of this year, according to the TBI. Blah, 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 blah. Overall crime was down 13.9% in the first 3 months of 2024 compared to the same period the year before. Now, I find that really ironic, seeing that we are outpacing our homicide numbers from last year. How do you square that with these reports? They say major violent crime rate was driven down because of the decreases in the following categories. Murders. What on earth are they talking about? There were like 14 yesterday. Actually, just this week, there have been over 10 people shot, and there were two overnight, so 12 people shot. But again, crime is going down. That was what the mayor said yesterday, and we're all supposed to believe him. Aggravated assaults down 8.4%, robberies 16.3%, rapes 30.3%. So Jeff says, and I'm referring to Jeff Calkins, who writes for the Daily Memphian, says, don't expect to see this going viral. All these curmudgeons just angry about crime. The folks over at KWEM, and he got blasted. Everybody was like, shut the actual up, sir. One of the people responded, cop gets killed, 10 people shot in a single day one weekend. A person gets killed 7 a.m. on the interstate this week. Geez, I wonder why people aren't impressed with this headline, Jeff. You know, this would be like a dude that's 700 pounds or a chick that is 400 pounds and she loses 10 pounds. And the headline is woman declares victory because she's lost pound. Okay, the woman is 700 pounds. The dude is 800 pounds. Like this is not something we should be celebrating. Anyways, Jeff then responded and said, I don't expect anyone to declare complete victory over this new report showing crime is actually dropping. He says, but 10% is 10% and I welcome any progress. Okay. So the district attorney's office had released a statement saying that they got caught with their hand in the cookie jar and caught with their pants down. So here's what they said. Our initial statement was crafted before I listened to the entire audio of the bond hearing and was based on preliminary information from the case prosecutor. While our case prosecutor accurately conveyed our position or our opposition to any lowering of the bond or ROR, upon reviewing the audio, we realized that the phrase strongly oppose was not correct. We acknowledge any confusion that this may have caused. He goes on to say the prosecutor opposed any lowering of the bond and stressed the importance of cases involving stolen vehicles and Glock switches. This is in accord with our V11 violent crime initiative, blah, 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 blah. I don't have time to read the rest of this nonsense. So he gets caught lying and he calls it confusion. No one is confused. No one is confused. I think the entire city is on this district attorney. So I'm going to read your comments in 1 second, but I did want to get to this story concerning Wanda Halper. So first, let's talk to the people. The people can still not get their car tags. Some can, but depending on the day, the office, the lines are like still like 2 hours long. Take a listen to this cut in 22.
I was here Friday and there were a ton of people. I mean, the line was backed up and around the staircase. It was over an hour. First, I went to one line, then I went to a second line, and then I went on the very long line.
That audio obtained by WREG. So County Clerk Wanda Halpert was a no-show when she was supposed to show face in front of the Shelby County Commission yesterday after a vote regarding the practices in her office, right? She has bad math. The numbers, the revenue reports were fraudulent. So the state had to come in and audit her math. She's blaming it on the fact that Excel was difficult to navigate. So anyways, I do agree with that. It is a very difficult program, but that kind of is why we're paying her so much money. So she sent a text to one reporter in town, and I think it's Kelly Cook with WMC. And the reporter said, clerk, where were you? And the clerk responded, oh, I have a really busy day. I'll get back to you later. So Mick Wright, who is on this one, he's like kind of the Brent Taylor on the local issue surrounding the county clerk. And here's what he had to say after she didn't show up yesterday, K24.
I'd like to see the county commission say once and for all that we expect better.
You feel like you kind of narrow in on just Wanda Halpert?
No, I think the other offices are doing what they're supposed to do.
So the question now needs to be, when is it time to remove her from her office? But that's not going to happen because at the end of the day, you've got radicals that sit on the commission. And I actually disagree. I mean, if they find that similar to Alejandro Mayorkas that got off the hook yesterday, that Wanda is committing high crimes and misdemeanors, then she's got to go. But incompetence is not a high crime and misdemeanor. Incompetence is the bona fides of every Shelby County elected official, and we vote for them. So I really don't have much more to say other than do better, Memphis, and don't vote for her next time. But you will, because we are insane, clinically insane when it comes to how we vote. Commissioner Brittany Thornton, the radical racist on the commission, had this to say because it came up. Should we try to start an effort to remove the clerk? And she was dead against it. Cut 23.
I just would not want to set, you know, this dangerous precedence of us overstepping our boundaries as elected. As I've seen us really respect a lot of boundaries. We respect the boundaries of the sheriff. We respect the boundaries of other autonomous leaders. I think that we should continue to keep that same energy.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of agree with her. So on this one, I mean, we can't just start throwing people out because they're incompetent leaders. Because if that is now the rubric for expelling lawmakers, well, then the entire city council effectively would be vacant. The mayor, we wouldn't have a mayor. The police chief, by the way, we're going to get into the police chief coming up in the next hour. Whatever happened to the whole interim thingy, right? She was like our transition police chief. And that's because the entire city of Memphis, now this is the one thing that unites both Republicans and radical zealots and communists like Decarcerate Memphis, is that everybody hates the police chief. Now, why Republicans and tough on crime Memphians do not like the police chief is it's very clear she does not have the back of law enforcement. And we've got sources to back that up. On the other hand, and we're going to break soon and we'll read your comments, is the fact that Decarcerate Memphis hate her because they believe that she was directly involved with the death of Tyree Nichols because she created a crime-fighting organization known as the Scorpion Unit. So everybody hates her, except for the mayor and some on the city council. I mean, find a stronger duo than our police chief and Mayor Paul Young. So they told us that she was going to be back in front of the city council to be discussing her new title, which is interim. Interim. Whatever happened to that? Because if you hear the police chief, she's not being introed anymore as the interim. She is our police chief wearing a full face of makeup, making a ton of money, and she is here to stay. And I find that unacceptable. So I think we need to get on the phone with our city council members and demand that conversation to be had. And I've got more to say, and I see your comments. So we're going to take a break, and I'll read those on the other side. If you want to have your say on the morning show, our number is 901-260-5926. 901-260-5926. That police chief, she's got to go. Like yesterday, not today. We'll be right back.
Donald Trump is in the courthouse right now. I mean, history has begun.
And the Biden campaign says that while Trump is in court, Biden is, quote, running the country.
The judge is in a tough spot here. No judge wants to be that, you know, person that is the one to throw former President Trump in jail for criminal contempt.
What do Democrats do? How do his opponents try to utilize this time?
Well, Joe, the split screen will be Donald Trump in a courtroom, Joe Biden on a campaign trail. So I think that's a very important juxtaposition.
Why is it that it's only coming to trial now? It turns out that is kind of a funny story. Funny in a bad way.
Oh, this is a legal nerd Super Bowl, right? Like, I'm kind of excited about this.
That's the part I need to do.
But that's exciting to someone like me.
Okay, turn it down. Get a room, everyone. Okay, so the biggest love story of the century, the mainstream media and former President Donald Trump's case in Manhattan. Steve, I know you're a romantic guy, but if this is the new Romeo and Juliet, I'm not romantic anymore, and I want nothing of it.
Well, their excitement over this bogus case that is literally putting a stacked jury that would make, you know, those old hanging juries in the old West, you know, let's hang him and then we'll have the trial. The ridiculous judge who should have recused himself and that should already be being disbarred for his violation of even the fundamental rules of ethics as an attorney, much less a judge. You've got the DA who ran for office promising to get Trump. So he is literally, no pun intended, trumped up these charges that are a alleged federal crime that would be a misdemeanor to try and contort it into a felony when there's no underlying crime and when his key witnesses are a woman who denies she had a relationship with Donald Trump, who owes Donald Trump $600,000 in legal fees for her bogus defamation case against him, and then a serial perjurer. These are the star witnesses of the Democrat DA, and yet the media is just, you know, apoplectic with so much joy and happiness over the fact that Trump will be back in court rather than on the campaign trail the next 6 weeks. Now, the good thing is that when you see Joe Biden on the campaign trail,
yes,
keeping him on the campaign trail is the best thing that could happen for Donald Trump while he campaigns, you know, every night in New York, in Harlem, or in Brooklyn, or in one of the other boroughs, and cuts into the Democrat base and will make them come back and have to defend that as people see the media coverage of Trump every day and see the coverage of Joe Biden every day on the, quote, campaign trail, where the lack of enthusiasm and his lack of mental capacity will be on full display. I think one of the news commentators you included in that clip, it'll be a split screen. Yeah, let's have that split screen all day. I want folks in the bodega area of Harlem cheering Trump while the split screen shows, you know, Joe Biden incapable of walking or communicating. Yeah, let's have that split screen every day.
Yeah. Okay. So multiple ways I want to take this because you covered a lot there. But I am going to speaking of romance, Steve, we're going to role play. Okay. You're going to be the defense attorney for President Trump. And we're going to go through a couple of these jurors. And you are going to say whether they are going to be Team Trump or on, let's say, Team Truth, as opposed to just hateful jurors. So juror number one, he's a man who lives in West Harlem. He works in sales. He's married, likes to do anything outdoorsy, and gets news from the New York Times, Fox News, and MSNBC. Do you want to keep him or send him?
Could be a fair juror, but I'd want to know more details because in big high-profile cases, you always have people who are lying to try to get on the jury. They may want to, you know, convict the person. They may want to let them off. They may just want the attention. So you have to be particularly careful to ferret out those, in this case, who are either lying to get on the jury so they can help Trump, lying to get on the jury so they can hurt Trump. And you've got a judge that is picking from a pool of 87 to 90% of the people who we know voted against Trump. They had to exclude half the jury pool who went and admitted right out of the block, I can't be fair to Trump. Well, that's the half that's telling the truth. How many of them are lying? So this guy might sound good, say, oh yeah, I get my news from Fox News and I'm an outdoor guy, I like to hunt and fish. You know, he looks like a Trump guy, right? That's to get him on the jury.
Yeah, okay, so that's really interesting because there was one woman that you could make the argument she perjured herself because she said that she was impartial, but then it turns out she is lying under oath because she's been filling her social media feeds with anti-Trump propaganda. Take a listen to this in cut number six. She did this on camera. Take a listen.
Can you share your opinion of the former president and why you felt that you could be unbiased?
I'm not a fan. During COVID-19, I lived with someone who was immunocompromised, and I think his handling of COVID-19 was abysmal. I have a sister who's adopted from China, and the comments he made about China when he was running for president made her very anxious, and therefore made me angry. There are policies he has supported that regard women and
so, Steve, as you can hear in that audio, they just hate Trump. So at the end of the day, or if you're a predicting man, do you think they only need one to really hang this thing? What do you make of it? And if he is found guilty in that verdict, does it make an impact as we're now just 200 days from November 5th?
Well, first of all, you know, at least she's off the jury. The judge has heard that same kind of litany of anti-Trumpism and then put people on the jury.
Yep.
Those are the ones that should concern the Trump team, should concern anybody who believes in justice and fairness. And it's another indication that this judge is a hanging judge, as long as it comes to a Donald Trump figure. not going after Democrats or liberals in the same way. I think that the prospects of getting a fair trial in this case are zero for Donald Trump. Likely that they can get some sort of a verdict at the end of the day. You might get one juror that will hang out and say, no, this is ridiculous. You do have people like Alan Dershowitz. You have other liberal Democrats who are even coming forth and saying, this trial is a travesty. Bill Barr, who is no fan of Donald Trump, the former AG, yeah. is saying he will vote for Donald Trump if only because of this, you know, abysmal attack on justice and fairness in our courts. So you may have some people that actually get in the jury and are fair and decide, no, this is ridiculous. This guy didn't do anything wrong. They can't prove intent. They can't prove that. Donald Trump is going to have very good attorneys, you know, cutting holes in this, you know, ridiculous case that is not based on law or fact. It's just based on, you know, again, a get Trump mentality by the DA, the court, and by the jury pool in New York. So I think there's a chance that even with all the odds stacked against him, that Donald Trump gets a not guilty verdict. And by the way, a not guilty verdict can't be appealed by the prosecutor. A not guilty verdict sticks. A guilty verdict can be appealed. And I think if it's a hung jury, they could retry. But if one holds out and they end up, you know, getting a not guilty verdict, then the prosecutors can't appeal that.
All right, I want to tie in two stories into one. So you've got more Republicans going along with Marjorie Taylor Greene and saying, you know, this guy Mike Johnson, he is completely America last. At the same time, the House hands over the articles of impeachment to the Senate, and the Senate majority basically shredded those up and said they were unconstitutional because there was no high crimes and misdemeanors. Well, here's the House Speaker saying he's disappointed with the Senate actions. I'll get your take on both of those topics. Take a listen to Cut 9.
We're deeply disappointed in the Senate's action. The Senate's action they've just taken on the Mayorkas impeachment proceedings. There should have been a full trial. The American people should have been able to see the evidence and evaluate for themselves what I think they know already intuitively, and that is that Secretary Mayorkas had a fantastical breach of duty. I mean, he breached his constitutional responsibility. He's openly defied the federal law on immigration and the will of Congress. In my view, he has lied on multiple occasions to Congress under oath, and I think he's done it to me when I used to serve on the House Judiciary Committee. In my view, I believe my evaluation is he's probably the least effective and I think most dangerous in terms of his policy implementations of any cabinet secretary in the history of the United States. And if there's ever been a cabinet secretary that deserved to be impeached, he is that. And the idea that the Senate...
All right, Steve, take a stab at those topics.
Mike Johnson is disappointed. That's the best he can get up. Oh, I'm disappointed? This guy committed a felony. This guy has committed perjury.
Perjury.
And yet the Democrats in the Senate decide a felony commissioned by the Secretary of Homeland Security does not amount to high crimes and misdemeanors. It is atrocious. It is a slap into the face to the Constitution and to the American people. And for the Democrats in the Senate to vote unanimously against even proceeding with their constitutional duty to have a trial, again, is them truly giving the finger to the Constitution and to the American people. In terms of Mike Johnson and Marjorie Taylor Greene's efforts, I'm appalled that we don't have enough Republicans who are immediately removing him as Speaker. Immediately. The damage he is doing may be irreversible, and no Speaker, meaning nothing can get done in Congress, will be better than this Speaker, who is not even Democrat light. He's just going full bore with whatever the Biden and the liberal woke Democrats want to have done, sending more money to Ukraine when they can't account for what we've sent, sending more money to Ukraine while abandoning our efforts on the border here, sending $300 million to help them secure their border when we won't spend a dime here. We're sending $60 billion to Ukraine. That is more than the budget of the United States Marines. He is a complete abject failure. He is a liar. He has flip-flopped. He has broken his word. And I am personally convinced that he has made the flip-flop on FISA warrantless searches, made the flip-flop on money for Ukraine before the border is secured, because he is being blackmailed. When he went in to meet with the FBI and they showed him various files, I think the files they showed him were not those that showed a threat to America. I think they were a threat to him. They showed him his file, and the FBI, that has a track record going back to J. Edgar Hoover of using their information to force politicians to bend to their will, are doing that right now in the U.S. Congress.
Mm. All right. Well said, Steve. Is it Thursday? Yes. Is it Thursday? Yes, it's Thursday. Okay. I thought maybe it was Tuesday for a second. So I'm going to catch up with you next Thursday because my friend Fred Tappan is going to be in for me on Monday. Thanks for stopping by and appreciate your insights. Guys, go follow Steve on X at The Gill Report. Steve, thanks for dropping by.
Thanks. Have a great time off.
All right. Good stuff. I am going to Manhattan and I will be there after the show, like I'm jumping on a plane. Please pray for me because American Airlines is the plane of choice in this case, and they can't keep their wheels on a plane. And furthermore, I'm going to be in Manhattan tomorrow where the president is going to be in court. So maybe I just do the show from there. I could phone in outside of the courtroom. How fun would that be? I don't know that I'm going to do that. It looks too much. It's too crazy. There's all these protesters and it's so much intersectionality. You've got like the gays protesting Trump for some reason, but you've also got the pro-Hamas people coming in there and it's just a mess. So on my time off, do I want to be involved and centered right in the midst of that? Absolutely. Heck no. So I'm still working on the itineraries, you can tell. On the other side of the break, we're going to jump more into some of our local stories. So Biden's economy is wreaking havoc on Dinstuhls. And if that's not your 73rd reason not to vote for President Biden, that should be it. Okay? Because the chocolate prices in America right now are through the roof, and that is going to be passed right on to the cost of the consumer. So we've got that story as well. Don't go away. And welcome back to the morning show. Going to read through a couple of your comments and then get to this story. Dean writes, it's all in the way they classify the crimes now. This from a source within Memphis police. And Dean is referring to the propaganda that the Daily Memphian pushes and releases every single day that would tell us that we are not believing the reality that crime is really bad here. Because they say crime is going down and we've got the stats to prove it. They say it's down 10%. And we covered this last week with the FBI, because also this is federal talking points at this point as well, where President Biden is touting crime reduction all across the country. And the FBI just completely changed up how they log in, share and release data, and the numbers are completely inaccurate. Bob Hendry, who's on the chat this morning, also pointed that out the other day. So I agree with you, Dean. Linda writes, it seems the Daily Memphian is a spokespiece for the Dems, plus their writing is poor. Wow, Linda's cracking me up. So not only are they the spokespiece for the Dems, I mean, they actually are. Jeff Calkins, speaking of him, because we talked about him just a couple minutes ago. He released this op-ed after the mayor's big address where the mayor basically said, if you want to reduce crime, you're going to give us more money. And if you don't give us more money, you don't care about crime. Okay. Talk about, manipulation. So Jeff writes this headline, this op-ed, and it's Mayor Young has a request for Memphians. Don't leave. I feel like we need music for this because it's basically a love affair. And he basically goes on to say, 25 minutes into his speech, after reviewing all that he had learned in his first 100 days as mayor, after revealing that he would be asking for a property tax hike next week, Mayor Paul Young had pointed out a request for Memphians to not leave. He goes down through and says, the crowd rose into a loud standing ovation, but it's quite a thing for a mayor to say, isn't it? Not exactly the stuff of bumper stickers. You can bet that the mayors of Nashville, Charlotte, and Atlanta aren't asking people not to flee their city. It's especially striking coming from a mayor who spent much of his first 100 days talking about hope. So why did the mayor do it? It's an admirable ask, isn't it? We've heard these echoes before. It's not what your city can do for you. It's what you can do for your city. Okay. So now he's JFK. And that's country, not city. So anyways, he says that the mayor is the most inspirational, hopey and changey Barack Obama 2.0 that we've ever seen in this city. Yeah. So your point, Linda, they are in the pocket of the mayor's office. Let me continue. Dean writes, Halbert figures if Hunter can do it, she can. That's funny. John says, liberalism is a mental disorder. Yeah, it is. It absolutely is. We've got some audio to bolster your claim. Mindy writes, the city council, the mayor needs to be vacated. Yeah, I mean, if that is the rubric that Republicans want to play when it comes to Shelby County Clerk Wanda Halbert, that she is incompetent, and because she's incompetent and derelicting her duty, she needs to be removed. If that becomes the standard, we're not going to have a mayor, we're not going to have a police chief, and we're not going to have city council members and Shelby County commissioners. Bob Henry refers to what's happening in the House. He says that the American people know that the director of Homeland Security has one job, and that is to secure the homeland. If the southern border is open, he's failed to do his job. There's no trial needed. There's no media circus needed. And he's referring to Alejandro Mayorkas. He then goes on to say, this is the system of checks and balances established by our founders in the Constitution, and the cowards in Congress are not fulfilling their jobs. Chief among them is our own Congressman David Kustoff, who is sitting on the Ways and Means Committee, has the power to drive this issue home, and he won't. He finishes with, it's time to stop allowing congressmen and women to manipulate the media and keep the circus going. It's time we demand they achieve results, period. No more excuses. Yes. And Dean says this. Dean, you're going to get me in trouble. He says Kustoff should do what Adam Kinzinger does on his X page and put that he's a proud rhino. All right. Do you want me to have a job tomorrow morning? Because if I see what you're saying. And I wish sometimes that he would take a page out of Congressman Burchett's book, who will join the show in just a couple of minutes. Tim Burchett is going to join the program, and we're going to jump into some national topics. Okay. So the chocolate situation. Take a listen to this audio, because we're running out of time. Take a listen to this in Cut 15.
I love chocolate, especially white chocolate. It's so creamy, and it's delicious.
But she won't like the way the market is headed. The cost of cocoa has tripled in the past year. The manager of Sweet Noshings told us it was unexpected.
We've driven our price points up a couple of times because of the cost of chocolate.
We're just seeing these prices escalate dramatically, more than it's ever happened before.
Rebecca Dinstall told us this is the most dramatic price increase her family has ever seen.
It is outrageous. We are expecting our raw chocolate cost to increase by at least 100%.
Dinstall is bracing for an inevitable price increase in late summer or early fall, although she doesn't yet know by how much.
So we've held prices for the last year without an increase, but now that I'm afraid that's going to soon come to an end.
Yeah, so if you don't want to see chocolate become $12 for a box, don't vote for Biden. Is it that difficult, people? If you needed another reason not to vote for Democrats, it's because they are raising the prices of truffles. Unbelievable. A huge fan of Dinstall's chocolate.
What's the message? Great people. To Iran?
Don't. Just bad economy. We'll be right back.
As President Biden said, just don't.
Exactly. One word. Pretty straightforward.
I'm going to bomb the shit out of them. It's true. I don't care. They've got to be stopped.
Yeah, they do need to be stopped. Whatever happened to a strong leader? Is it any wonder we're in the mess we are, both foreign and domestic, when it comes to the approaches of these two different, very different administrations? Look at what happened over the weekend, the attack towards Israel by Iran. And I know our next guest, who is a patriot, has a lot to say about that and a lot more. Congressman Tim Burchett with District 2. So not necessarily in our area, but we love him because he speaks for us here in District 8 and in District 9. Congressman, welcome back to the morning show. How are you?
Hey, I think I got the wrong number. I was calling him for the roller derby tickets.
wrong caller, but we would give them to you if we had them. We do have great popcorn we give to people, and we could all use some popcorn as we watch what's happening in the House, Congressman. So it's a mess.
You're correct. I should, with your opening salvo, I should have ran you for a national party chairman. Look, the situation is this. We have a very weak leader who is mentally incapable. Yesterday, he was talking about his uncle who's they had to ditch their plane in the Second World War, and he talked about how he was eaten by cannibals. I mean, this guy is completely off the reservation. You know, we didn't have this under Trump because, again, our enemies feared us and our friends respected us. They no longer fear us. You see wars breaking out on top of wars. And then what does America do to our the war pimps, as I like to call them, because that's what they're doing is pimping wars and making money. They are funding both sides of these wars. Case in point, we're in Gaza. We're sending money to Hamas for so-called humanitarian aid, and it's very fluid, as you know. It's fungible, as the educated say. And then, of course, we're sending money to Israel, and now we're urgently having to send money to Ukraine. We sent $114 billion, and anybody who opposes that is all of a sudden accused of being in bed with Putin. Look, Putin's a dirtbag. I hope he leaves this earth as soon as possible. But the truth of the matter is that Ukraine does not have a good reputation, for good reason, of managing money. And we are, and the way they're selling this war now is we're going to loan this money to them. We're loaning anybody who believes that is they're idiots, because currently part of the money, the $114 billion that we sent to Ukraine, is paying for things like pensions. We're not, and then I think 40 or 50% of it's cut there. The left leaning economists are telling us, oh, it's coming back to America, Tim. And I said, really? How's that? Well, they're buying our missile defense systems and our bullets, our manufacturing. Well, if that's the case, just send 40% to our manufacturing, or give them a tax break of 40%, and then we wouldn't be killing people. You know, it's just, there is no rhyme or reason to it other than we're corrupted and we are completely on the hook with all this stuff. And it's just, it's beyond belief, really, as to what's really going on. And I wish people would pay more attention to it and quit listening to The View for their political points.
Yeah. I mean, for obvious reasons, Congressman Tim Burchett on our phone line this morning. I've got a question. What is the firm? Because the House Freedom Caucus is blasting House Speaker Mike Johnson over this $95 billion foreign aid package, which, to your point, would fund things like Ukraine, Israel, and some maybe to Taiwan. You can break it down if I got it wrong. So in this statement, they said Mike Johnson, Chuck Schumer, Mitch McConnell, and Hakeem Jeffries and the firm have engineered the America Last bill process to get their precious Ukraine aid through the House, no matter the cost. What is the firm?
Well, the firm is the uniparty. It's the people you always see will be out on the tarmac greeting the president, whoever the president may be. And, you know, the big money boys, the National Chambers of Commerce, you can wrap them all up into it. Mm-hmm. But honestly, the rest of us ought to just go home, because this group, they always seem to infiltrate whoever our leadership is, and they always seem to pull the strings. And, you know, all of a sudden, you know, we're being told that, you know, history will not be kind to us if we let Kyiv fall. And, you know, I dare say most Americans couldn't find Kyiv on the map. But I'll tell you what they can find of this $114 billion. We could have built a wall, I think, 12 times over.
Wow.
With that money. We could have given every homeless veteran in America $1 million. We could have fixed the lead in the water at Flint, Michigan, a half a dozen times. I mean, you know, it's just go down the list. But this is our priority. Why is this our priority? Why are we doing this is the question. And the answer is somebody's getting rich off of it. Case in point, the missile defense system that we sent over to Ukraine. I'm not arguing whether we shouldn't or we should or we shouldn't. I wouldn't have done it. But what did we do immediately? We replenished our missile defense system. But what did you see? Because it's public records, Republicans and Democrats owning stock in that missile defense company that was issued that no-bid contract prior to anybody in the mainstream hearing about it.
Hmm.
So these people own stock. Look, it's a crooked bunch up here. This is not, quit calling it a swamp. A swamp is a pretty cool thing. It's an ecosystem. I've said this many times. It's created by God. This is an open sewer. This it just flows in and nothing flows out. And what flows out is not very pleasant.
No.
Yes. And we keep electing these people in both parties. Start asking questions. Start using that brain God gave you. And again, turn off those idiots on the television on both sides and use your brain. Quit. And every time I read a news feed, like yesterday, I was in the middle of a big hoopla. And I was like, was I in the same room as the media reporting this? I mean, it was just a complete attack on me. I mean, not me personally, but mm-hmm. it was my values. And, you know, and this is the representation that we're getting. And we allow it because we continue to, you know, during the civil rights movement, black folks had it figured out. They figured it out. The economics is where it's at. You know, if your newspaper is putting out garbage and left-wing propaganda that you don't like, call those car dealers that are buying those full-page ads and say, hey, I'm not going to buy your cars anymore. I like you. I like your cars, but I'm not buying it anymore because, dadgummit, you're supporting this stuff. And that's the only way we're ever going to get to it. It's economics, and we got to get to the bottom of it. We got to quit it.
Wow. Wow, that is so perfect and spot on to what we were talking about in the last hour, because we've got one of those liberal newspapers and they just push propaganda and they're being supported by, to your point, many people that we share our neighborhoods with. It's unbelievable. I will say this, though, because we could talk about the Mayorkas impeachment, but we've already talked about that and you could say all you wanted to say. But I am curious about this, just on a personal level where you've been able to promote and project truth as opposed to the news you're talking about. I see your stuff on X. It gets hundreds of thousands of views. Do you think the truth is finally getting around conglomerated media and people are starting to realize that we are being controlled by a unit party, which includes many of the Republicans we voted for?
I think it's getting around. They're trying. That's why they keep all, they're always trying to shut down these smaller conservative news networks. That's why the taxpayers are supporting NPR, and the head of NPR is out, you know, is out trashing our viewpoint every chance they get.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they'll figure out a way eventually to put them out of to get to us. They're trying to, but I think I would swamp the social media. I would follow people that have your values. And thank you for plugging me on Twitter. But, you know, I agree. They haven't figured out a way to shut us down. And they're trying. They're trying every day. But please, I beg people, turn off the national news. Quit buying your local paper if it's a rag. That's what we've got in Knoxville. You know, they don't, it's not even, it's written. If I want to know what's going on in Nashville, Tennessee, I buy the Knoxville News Sentinel. You know, they can't keep from trashing me and my values every day. So at some point we got to say enough is enough. And that's a trick of the left too. They've infiltrated our education systems. You know, our kids come back from college and all of a sudden we're just stupid idiots and capitalism is evil and this country's just been evil. Forget that we've saved the world and that capitalism outside of Christianity has done more for this world than anything else. You know, forget all those facts. And you know, I think at some time we got to say enough is enough and just shut them all down. Shut them all down. And, you know, we got to stand up to the NPRs of the world. You got to stand up to people in your Sunday school class, at your bridge club, your senior center, at the water trough every day, mm-hmm. at the office. Stand up to them, because they're just shouting us down in the public square. And the majority of the people think like you and I do, but we're just being told we're ignorant, we're stupid, your traditional values no longer apply. And that's what built this country. That's what kept us from falling off the edge. We forget that, I think, and we let them, well, that's okay. We'll let somebody else handle that fight. No, dadgummit. It's put before you. Go after them. Go after them.
All right. Going to leave it there. I feel like I went to church. Congressman Tim Burchett's church. Wow, that would be an interesting service, Congressman. All right, guys, I want you all to...
I would lose my tax-exempt status.
Yes.
And then I wouldn't even ask for offering. So there you go.
All right, guys, go follow the Congressman on X. You can find him at Tim Burchett. That is B-U-R-C-H-E-T-T at X. We appreciate the Congressman dropping by, and it is so weird and wrong that these Congress people are compromised. I don't understand it. I do, because he just kind of explained why people go to Washington, and then the next thing, they are billionaires or millionaires. How does that happen? Well, lobbying firms, and to talk about the firm, the people that are boosting, fundraising, and supporting and lifting up these senators or Congress people. But how is it that a Congressman Tim Burchett is not compromised? That would have been my follow-up question. We just ran out of time. You know, it's so frustrating because there are a lot of good people that go to Washington, some that we know. And yet when they get there, they're voting like they are Democrats, and they forget who sent them there. And our job is not to be their friends, by the way. Our job is to remind them of who sent them there, which is we the people. So anyways, ran over. Great rant by the Congressman. That was fun. And of course, yes, I could have asked him about the impeachment hearings of Alejandro Mayorkas, but you know the drill. You know that the Democrats were going to kill that immediately, and that's exactly what they did. So let's get behind the thinking of some of our elected officials. I love that. All right, 901-260-5926. 901-260-5926. More on the other side. Don't go away. All right, so the left needs funny bones. I think they've lost them, which typically Marxists and communists, the one thing they can't do is laugh because they hate happiness. And I mean, look at what they come after. They want to come after our cars. They want to come after cows because cows fart and that's bad for the air, the pollution. It's like they just never stop. The gas stoves, they're against those apparently now. So anyways, Republicans still are funny, in my opinion. They can still crack a joke, and because they're not embracing the political, cultural correctness, wokeness, they crack jokes. Well, anyways, Senator Brian Taylor cracked one yesterday, and he was debating a bill on the Senate floor, and it is basically it would reallocate hotel money taxes to cover different public financial gaps for the downtown Memphis arena renovation. So we've been talking about how can we renovate, spruce up Beale Street for our sports teams, yada, yada, yada. Anyhow, he's getting pushed back by Senate Democrats, including Charlemagne. Is that her name? I don't know. Oliver. She's the one that basically said that Senator Brent Taylor was the Ku Klux Klan leader of Tennessee. That's all you need to know about her. So she's pushing back on the bill. And then Brent says this and she loses it. Cut one.
Because a lot of people in Memphis have worked on this legislation. I mean, they have worked harder than a bunch of ugly strippers to try to get this done. And I want to make sure that we don't drop the ball here. So I'm willing to roll this to next week to give me opportunity to get with the chairman of the Finance Committee.
So
without objection,
the radical senator was sitting there and she was like, oh, how did he say that about sex workers? You know, like that's part of the LGBTQ community now. Like they embrace, you know, porn stars, etc. They quite literally view Stormy Daniels as like the next Eleanor Roosevelt. So they call them sex workers And so the Daily Hauler, which is, again, more propaganda in the state of Tennessee, they have a big social media account. They blasted the senator for his poor choice of words. All right. So speaking of being slammed, Travis Kelce, the football player and Taylor Swift's boyfriend, is currently being slammed by Taylor Swift fans. Swifties, as they're otherwise known and called. And the reason they're really upset about Mr. Kelce is because he liked a photo of Sage Steele with Donald Trump. And this would have been at a UFC event where Sage Steele was standing beside the former president, right? Because Trump, like on weekends, will go to Vegas and hang out with all of those guys. Dana White, Joe Rogan, I mean, Truman. I'm a big fan. I love seeing when the president goes to UFC events. So anyways, so he gets a picture with Sage Steele. And I guess they're claiming that Mr. Kelce, who was the spokesperson for Pfizer and all things left and woke policies, is now a Trumper. Despite the fact that President Trump has disavowed Travis Kelce. As a matter of fact, Trump has called Kelce a liberal who can't stand me. So anyways, all of these people are blasting him on social media. One chick said, Travis Kelce can eat blank for all I care. He's a drunk, xenophobic, fatphobic, Trump-loving bleep hole. Okay, so that's all I've got to say about that. A woman in Texas is behind bars after shooting her husband after catching him cheating on her. So they've been married for years, and according to Texas authorities, she walks into her house to see her husband cheating with another woman. That is when she grabs a gun and shoots the dude in the leg. So she wasn't shooting to kill, obviously. She was shooting to send a message, which is, you don't cheat on me. I mean, do you guys have a problem with this? I mean, if you're listening to country music, every lyric is, if you cheat on me, I'm going to grab the gun out of my pickup truck and I'm going to pop you with a gun, a bullet. It's like the whole gist of country music. She's just following through with the lyrics. So Miss Arevalo is accused of threatening to shoot the other woman, the side chick, who was also there at the house. She admitted to shooting her husband and told officers it was, in fact, her husband that deserves the jail time for cheating on her. Now, that's not an actual code of our U.S. law, though I would make an argument that it should be. Cheaters should be going to jail. It's the worst thing you can do. And I'm preaching to the choir. I've never cheated and I never plan on cheating. Why am I saying this now? Now I'm getting on a side tangent. No, there's this logo that I've seen on t-shirts and it's called, and it's quoted as, cheater be cheated on. So I think the premise there is, you know you are going to be cheated on, so cheat first. Again, cheat or be cheated on. That's a terrible relationship philosophy. Anyhow, I'm done talking about that. I ran into a crime scene. No, I was driving to work the other day. This was Tuesday morning, and I saw this headline. But I actually saw it. I didn't stop. So a driver was found asleep in a running stolen cars at Huey's on Poplar Avenue in East Memphis. It's the Huey's just down the street from our broadcast center. And I saw this because I saw all of these groups of officers surrounding this SUV in the parking lot of Huey's. I know what it was until police have released more information. So a dude was found asleep in a stolen car that was left running in a Huey's parking lot. This happened around 4:30, 5 o'clock in the morning, which checks. It's when I'm rolling into work. So the dude is a 27-year-old. His bond has been set at $5,000, so he's got to post $500 and he'd be out of jail. Officers were patrolling the area when they saw this black vehicle parked at an angle in the Huey's parking lot. The vehicle's headlights were on, but the officers didn't see anyone inside. That is because Mr. Pilot, as his name is, Pilot, was asleep. He had reclined the driver's seat and was snoozing. Police approached the car. They saw a man in the driver's seat sleeping with the seat reclined. The car was left running and the gear shift was in neutral. Officers put the vehicle in park and turned off the car. the driver, and I'm reading this copy by one of our local TV stations. It's terrible, so I apologize. So the driver was detained and arrested. Turns out the Memphis police officers ran the vehicle's VIN and found that it was stolen in February. And the car was worth $17,000. I mean, my gosh. Does he have to pay for the car? I mean, well, I guess he's now having to pay $5,000 bond, so he probably doesn't have that money. Anyhow, nonetheless, kind of crazy because I saw this in the parking lot of Huey's, and the dude just simply got lazy. It takes work to steal a car. I mean, don't ask me because I have no experience stealing a car. But, I mean, it's a whole evening event. Find a car, steal it, whatever you use, the Kia Bowie TikTok challenge. And the next thing you know, you've got a vehicle. So the guy gets tired and he falls asleep. That was a mistake because officers are still patrolling East Memphis. A lot, actually. Anyways, we're going to come back on the other side of the break. We're going to talk about big problems within the Memphis Police Department. Rank and file, losing the trust of the officers on the ground. We're being told that there are 2,000 police officers. That isn't true. We're hemorrhaging in the police department in the ranks there. It's terrible. And it's not as though we can afford it, seeing that we are the most dangerous city in America. The cap that we need is 2,500 officers. It was Mayor Jim Strickland that said, while he was in office, that he loses sleep over the fact that we don't have 2,000 officers. We don't have even 2,000 officers, much less 2,500 officers. And there's a reason why. And we'll jump into that theory on the other side of the break. Also, Memphis taxpayers not buying what the mayor is selling, which is you need to buy yourself out of our crime problem via a property tax. That story on the other side. Don't go away.
It's just a mess. And we are paying for these services. And it wants to raise our property taxes. You know, if we live in the city, we're getting double dipped. We're paying city and county.
Welcome back to the morning show. Ben Dieter here. Glad to have you guys joining us on this Thursday morning. So that was a really angry Memphian post the news that the mayor of Memphis wants to do this. Cut 25, everyone.
I'm going to ask for a tax increase.
No.
I'm putting it out there straight and plain so you hear it directly from me.
No, no, no. Nope, not doing it. And to this woman's point, so it was, I think, Channel 5 that interviewed this woman, and she was standing in front of her front yard, like on the front lawn, and she had like 72 bags of trash. She said, I have made 62 complaints to the city of Memphis to pick up my damn trash. And they cannot bring a vehicle, one of the dump trucks, to come out here and pick up the trash. Is it a dump truck, a garbage truck? I don't know. I have a chute in my apartment and I just take very blessed in that regard. Don't be too envious of me because I have 600 roommates. So that's frustrating, but I just take my trash to the chute and it goes down. So this woman doesn't have that luxury, right? The city is supposed to collect your trash. And we've gotten that complaint from our listeners as well. Like, they're just not doing that. And we're paying for the city services. But among all of the other things that we are going to fund in Paul Young's next, what, like 200 days? God help us. Is we've got to have better resources when it comes to picking up trash. And again, no, we're already paying for you to do that. So do your job and then convince me that you deserve more of our money. We're going to build a basketball court for midnight basketball players, because that sounds like a great idea. We are going to invest in healthcare, welfare, child care, Paw Patrol care. I mean, he was just rolling through this rap sheet the other night when he was delivering this address. And it's like, money does not grow on trees. I mean, for Democrats, it absolutely does, but the dollar means absolutely nothing. And furthermore, we're in a deficit of about $30 million, so someone's clearly not managing the checkbook. Like, no other Memphian or Shelby Countyan could get away with a $30 million deficit. Okay, I'm maybe stretching it a little bit and exaggerating, but you get the point. Like, who is balancing the city's checkbook? But no, we're just going to ask you guys to bail us out of the deficit. No. So my boss, Todd Starnes, took a stab at this on the national side. And here is what he had to say. Cut 28.
So they're going to be raising property taxes, and they're coming after all the businesses. And they're also, and the mayor also said that they're going to look at possibly defunding the police. Now, he didn't say defunding, but they're 500 officers short. And they're saying, you know what? We may not be able to fund those positions after all. But we're going to give the children midnight basketball. May I just ask a question about all you parents out there who allow your children to roam the streets after midnight? What you talking about? Really? What are you? Who does that? Why do you let your kids roam around the streets at midnight? Who? What kind of parents do that? Get your butts in home. And it's me. I'm really more basketball courts. Is that really what we need here in America? Is that what we need in Memphis, Tennessee? More basketball courts? How about this? What about reading a book? What about learning a trade? Is that too difficult to do? Anybody want to talk about that? What about spending that money if we have it, which we don't, but if we had the money, why not spend that in building more trade schools? Why not teach a kid how to do something to earn a living instead of playing basketball? I mean, look, if you want to dribble balls, you can do it on your own dime in your own time during the daylight hours. I got a lot to talk about here. We're going to take a quick break. 901-260-5926. But this, I use Memphis as an example because this is happening in cities all over America, all over the country.
So that was Todd's take on the mayor's proposal. And not only are we going to defund the police in order to build more basketball courts, we're going to charge and raise your property taxes. Yeah, what is the whole thing about basketball courts? Has that worked? I mean, we had Joey and Bill Gerner, Joey Solopek, Bill Gerner on the show yesterday, and off air we were talking about how many stories we have seen in the last 2 months where if there is a basketball court, there is a homicide. There is aggravated assault. And not just because the basketball players are fouling each other. No, they're pulling out guns. It's not just like an elbow to the face, because I've been guilty of doing that. You've got this new community center in North Memphis, the one that is truly going to stop Memphis crime. That's what we're being told anyway. You, the taxpayer, are funding for it, And there was a shooting the other night. Two teens got into a gun battle. They were in the backyard. Why weren't they on the actual basketball court doing what they were being told to do? Because they're lawless children that don't allegedly have parents. I mean, truly, where are the parents involved here? So anyways, it's just madness. And I know a lot of you guys have been responding on our Stop Memphis Crime, which, by the way, has blown up recently. And I think the message that we try to project, as opposed to the Daily Memphian, is, no, we're not just trying to scare you. We're just telling you what the rest of the media, what every politician, both Republican and Democrats, void of Brent Taylor, aren't telling you. Okay, that's like the philosophy that is what we try to do every single day. So here's what some of you guys are saying. Lester says, the city isn't getting any better. Sad to say, but it's the truth. Ed writes a very interesting point. Anyone else notice the common thread of activists not having children? Well, thank God. Thank God, because if these activists are breeding and having more babies, then we're really going to be screwed, especially here in Memphis. But you do raise an interesting point. Not only are activists childless, they typically do not have relationships. They're typically not in love with anybody. They're in love with causes. They've got conviction, allegedly. But they also rarely have jobs. And that's the issue we're running into with our effort to potentially have some form of a protest where we go in front of the city council and say, basically, can you stop defunding the police and releasing violent thugs out of jail? Is most of our listeners can't do that because they've got jobs and they've got kids. So we're just playing apples to oranges in the case of our activists. And I'm not using that word, I'm just making a point, to their activists because they don't have jobs. So speaking of people not having jobs, we've got to help out this young lady because she went viral over the weekend. She doesn't have a job and she's freaking out because she has to get on LinkedIn and search for a job. But all she wants to do is sit in her bed and smoke pot. Okay. Cut 12.
I'm was put on this earth to drink coffee, to sleep, to smoke weed, and to gossip. And you're telling me that I'm supposed to make a LinkedIn to get jobs? No. No one is okay. All of us are having the worst time. No one can afford anything. Money isn't even real. It's paper. Burn it for all I care. We need to go back to bartering and trading. And you're also telling me that our government is expecting me to retire at the age of 70? 70? I'm not even going to make it with how my life is going. I don't even think I'm going to make it to 45. I don't think any of us are going to even make it to 30 at this point. This earth is burning. Flowers are blooming in Antarctica. How is this the way that society functions? How is this the system that we live in?
Does anybody want to respond to that? Here's the number if you do. 901-260-5926. 901-260-5926. So, sweetheart, the reason you don't have any money is because you're sitting on your butt, unemployed, smoking pot, drinking coffee, and not getting on LinkedIn. I would say start there. She also says that the people at large, society, is not having a good time. Yeah, we've got some challenges, but I find my happiness, and this is probably problematic, I obviously find it in God, but I do find it in work. I find it in my 9 to 5, or in this case, it's more like a 4:30 to 12:30. And she's not finding it there because she's sitting at home scrolling on X or TikTok or Facebook. And I find it very troubling that this is now the mindset that my peers have accepted, and I have felt pressured into this group think as well. Don't get me wrong. You know, the fact that we have these discussions like, bro, we have to do this for the next 50 years, right? I'm 25. So I'm going to be working for a long time before I get to retire. And we view that as being victim. Like, we are being victimized by society and by capitalism. And therefore we deserve a handout. We need the checks, and it's not going to work that way unless they try to actually overhaul capitalism, which will only make us slaves to the borrower. Okay, so anyhow, the poor girl needs to get on LinkedIn ASAP. I had to actually have a class in college my junior year where it was just literally creating a LinkedIn profile. Did it help me get a job? No. Does it look great? Yes. But it's not that difficult. I know the job market is tough, but there are people hiring. But it first means you've got to set down your bong, set down the coffee cup, quit gossiping, dear, and get a job. Those are my thoughts. What about yours? Would love to hear. The crux, the crisis that a lot of young people find themselves in, are they true victims of capitalism? 901-260-5926. 901-260-5926. So on the other side of the break, I'm going to roll through a couple different stories. Also, there are these brawls that keep on breaking out at Memphis Shelby County Schools. There was one, a video has gone viral. You've got 50 kids and a teacher beating the crap out of each other. Anyways, Memphis Shelby County Schools has released a statement on it. We'll jump into that story coming up. Don't go away. And welcome back to the morning show. Reading a couple of your comments before we scoot on. And I've got a story on activists. Just insane. So Michael writes, I can tell you what kind of parents do that. Then referring to the story last hour where parents clearly don't know where their kids are at 12 o'clock and they're sending them to midnight basketball. He also says, thank God that activists don't have children, but those they advocate for are having way too many babies. I'm going to get canceled. Mindy writes, who the hell would want to hire that young Gen Z girl anyhow? And then she adds, did the so-called mayor say how much of an increase he is going to ask for? Since I'm 65 plus, there are two things I apply for every year, but they are based on your income every year. I apply for tax freeze and tax rebate for both city county taxes, and I get these every year. I will circle back on that. I've got the story in front of me. It's just going to take me a minute to explain. So we'll revisit that and answer that question. So there was a group of Google employees that did quite literally the unthinkable. Well, in my opinion, this is just like a no-brainer, which was go into Google's corporate offices, the actual CEO of Google, and sit in the office on their butts and stage some form of a protest because Google invests in AI that is being used by Israel, by the state of Israel. And they obviously want Google to divest from supporting Israel in any way. So it was like 90 employees, and Google hires a lot of employees. So these group are now speaking for the entire company, which they're not, but you get the point. Like, it's all over the news. And that's the case with a lot of these activists, is it only takes like seven. That's what happened with the 40 Bridge takeover, where there weren't that many people, but they shut down commerce in our city because no one could get in and out of this city. So that's what happened at Google. The audacity for you to go, that would be like me going down after the show and staging a protest in my boss's office and not expecting to get fired. Well, because if you don't do what we say and stop supporting quote unquote genocide, well, then you're going to have hell to pay. And what the employers of Google did was say, well, screw you. You're fired. Don't let the door hit you when you leave. And that's exactly what happened. Also, there was a story. These activists at Columbia, which is an Ivy League institution, which doesn't mean anything anymore, they set up a liberated zone on campus, and they said they are going to refuse until they leave, until, I guess, Columbia divest from Israel. So I looked at some photos of this trip. It looks like a homeless community. So there's like 50 tents out in the lawn of the school campus. And there's 60 tents that were set up, two large signs that say liberated zone and the Gaza solidarity encampment. And they're saying they refuse to leave the area until Palestine is free. They're going to be out there for a long time because Palestine is not free. Stop it. And that's not because of Israel. It's because they are being ruled by Hamas, which a lot of Palestinians in Gaza support Hamas. Okay. So anyways, the first seven, there were like seven students that got hauled off campus as a result of this. So anyways, that's all I have to say about that. Wanted to get to a couple more of your story. So some of you guys are saying what's happening with the Memphis police is ultimately they need to strike. I mean, that would send a powerful message. There's no question. Bob Hendry writing in that the police officers in Memphis need to go on a strike, plain and simple. That would solve a lot. So we're down not just 5,000 officers. The goal is 2,500. Daily Memphian propaganda. The propagandists say it's 2,000, but it's well below that. We're sitting around 1,800, right in that area. And as a matter of fact, you had about 20 officers leave the department last week, and who can blame them? So not only is the mayor saying that he is going to defund the police in a roundabout way, I mean, he's not forthright saying defund the police, but he's going to make budget cuts within the police department. Look at how their recruiting's going. They go to Puerto Rico to recruit police officers and did not recruit one. They had a recruiting event over the weekend, last week, the week before their officer was shot. I mean, and you look at how these officers have asked for more resources and they've not been being listened to at all. It's very clear. Can you blame these officers from walking off the job? The Daily Memphian had a piece not long ago where they said there is so much distrust in the police chief. It's at an all-time high. People don't trust her. And if they do speak out on the rank and file and the leadership within MPD, they are sent to traffic, retaliated against. That's a problem. There's a reason this police chief was fired. But why is our city clamoring onto her like she is the superhero, the superwoman, to solving crime here? I don't understand it. You've got both camps, people saying she's got to go on both sides. Decarcerate Memphis, hate her just as much as a lot of other people hate her that want her gone because she's not worried about the fact that the police department is hemorrhaging right now. All they want to care about is not getting into any civil lawsuits with the ACLU or the NAACP because they're terrified of the optics. It also could bolster what I've seen downtown when I am walking down Beale Street the other day, down South Main Street, and there was a street takeover and the cops are just standing there like, what are we to do? And I'm asking them, show your badge. And they didn't. Who is telling them to stand down? I don't have confirmation that the police chief was on the phone telling those officers to not get involved with that street takeover, but they weren't stepping up. And I don't blame the officers for not doing that. I think that the officers know that they don't have their back, and they being the leadership within Memphis police. And I don't think it's a theory because I've got some sources, and you guys have been saying this on our Stop Memphis Crime as well. Before we scoot, speaking of Memphis police and the Memphis Police Association, I did want to read this because one of our top stories this morning was the latest news where the district attorney said, in light of recent evidence, the 17-year-old not going to be charged as severe as we otherwise would because it appears that the fallen officer was killed by friendly fire, by another cop, not a thug, not this 18-year-old. Yeah, the kid is a thug. And if that kid would have been locked up in jail today, that officer would be with his wife and with his family. Let's be very clear. This new evidence changes nothing. Okay? But anyhow, the Memphis Police Association said the following in a statement. While the MPA, the department, and the city continue to grieve the loss of Officer Joseph McKinney, we must focus on the cause of this tragic incident. Officer McKinney made the ultimate sacrifice to protect the citizens of this city from two individuals that chose to become violent when encountering police. It was the result of the suspect's decision to become violent that led to the exchange of gunfire, which led to the tragic loss of life. We will continue to focus on Officer McKinney's valor in the face of danger and the sacrifice he made for the citizens of Memphis. On a related note, we did get new information on the Sea of Blue and those arrangements. That is on our Stop Memphis Crime page, also on our X. He'll be honored on Sunday starting at 7:45. That begins at the Southland Mall and then go through Whitehaven. So check that out because, again, we need to show up in a strong way because, frankly, the activists and Democrats aren't. So let's do that for him. That's going to do it for me for the rest of the week. Fred Tappan fills in for me on Friday and Monday. I will catch up with you guys on Tuesday. In the meantime, enjoy your weekend.